Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star, then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Johnny Nazarian, Education Program Manager at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much, Bella. As mentioned, my name is Johnny Nazarian. I'm the Education Program Manager here at Cancer Care, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop titled Accessing Cancer Treatment in Rural Communities. This activity is supported by Novartis Oncology, and I really want to thank them for the support of today's program. Now, before we start, I'd like to let you know how many people we have on this call today. We have over 150 participants, primarily from the United States, from rural, urban, suburban, and frontier communities. We also have a number of international participants from Afghanistan, Canada, and the Philippines. So it is a global call. We are delighted to have you all on this program today and that you've chosen to spend this next hour with us. Now I'm going to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Daniel Ehrman. And Dr. Ehrman is Assistant Professor of Medicine, Division of Hematology and Hematological Malignancies, Clinical Investigator, Chronic Lymphocytic Leukemia and Lymphoma, Huntsman Cancer Institute, University of Utah, Salt Lake City, Utah. And Dr. Ehrman will be discussing an overview of people in rural communities accessing cancer treatment, getting diagnosed and treated for cancer in rural communities, working with your healthcare team to get the best care near home, dealing with cancer treatments and other comorbid health concerns in rural communities, as well as working with your healthcare team to manage each symptom, treatment side effect, discomfort, and pain. I'm happy to hand it over to Dr. Ehrman.
Thank you so much. First of all, my name is Daniel Ehrman, Dr. Ehrman from Huntsman Cancer Institute in Utah. It is an absolute pleasure to be invited to speak to you all today, and I'm hopeful that I can convey some hopefully helpful information and shine some light on how things are from my side and dealing with patients that I see in my practice, and also things that I've learned from dealing with the community, other community oncologists that I work with, and then the patients who live from far away that I deal with as well. We here at Huntsman in Utah, we actually service the largest part of the actual United States by landmass. So we service multiple states surrounding Utah. So this topic will be looking at a little bit of an overview for patients in rural communities accessing cancer treatment. So starting off, first things first, getting diagnosed with cancer. First, getting diagnosed with cancer itself can be very overwhelming. It can also be very difficult and challenging to actually achieve a diagnosis. So if during your routine healthcare, you're getting some sort of imaging or something appears that there's some evidence of cancer, this is the most important step, is getting the diagnosis. And oftentimes it can be extremely challenging because, first of all, there's many, many different types of cancer. I know we tend to like lump them all together, but there's probably thousands of different types of cancer. So getting the most accurate diagnosis is the most important. And that can be challenging in the rural communities because you may not have immediate access to certain things like procedures or the right doctor. So really being an advocate for yourself and reaching out to, if there's ever a concern for cancer, reaching out to doctors near you, whether it's your primary care doctor or any other ways that you can get involved in the healthcare system to really get an accurate diagnosis. Now, you know, when you do that and you end up hearing that you may have cancer, and let's say you do get a diagnosis, you really want to make sure that there's very good biopsy and pathology that has really certified that you have this true diagnosis, whether it be lung cancer, whether it be skin cancer of some sort, whether it be a blood cancer like CLL, which is what I treat. That is really the first step. following a true diagnosis, you want to make sure that you have access to an oncologist, hematologist, someone who specializes in taking care of that cancer. So your primary care doctor is great as a starting point, but you will need a specialist, and there's different types of specialists. So someone who's board certified in medical oncology and hematology and or hematology, they can manage most types of cancer that you'll see, but you really want to meet with them. And they will essentially be your quarterback moving forward from there, and they can coordinate with all the other doctors that you may see. That oncologist will also be the primary person to determine your treatment plan. So unfortunately, if you have a lung doctor or some other sort of doctor, GI doctors, they're not the ones that really develop the treatment plan. Sometimes a surgeon can, or radiation oncologist, but it's really the oncologist that is gonna let you know how to treat this. Now, when you live in a rural community, it can also be difficult because you may live far away from your oncologist. You know, oncologists are generally in the center of a big city. They're usually near a hub of some sort, and there's a lot of people that live far away. It could be hours away, 3, 6, you know, very, very long time. I think there's a couple ways about it. I think it's always crucial to make sure you make those first few visits with any oncologist that you're referred to, whether they be 3 hours, 6 hours, 9 hours away. And oftentimes, once you meet with an oncologist, you get a diagnosis. If there's someone else that can manage your care closer to home, you can always ask your cancer doctor, is there someone else closer to home that can help manage this? Is there any specialists? And the answer is usually yes. There's usually some other cancer doctor closer to home. For myself, for example, I'm in Utah. I see patients from Montana who some of my patients live 13 hours away. And I can coordinate and find an oncologist that lives close to home. And us oncologists, we love to work together. We love to communicate with each other. And oftentimes, we believe it or not, we tend to know each other just through the grapevine. And the world is smaller than you think. And we kind of tend to know each other. And I think the biggest things are, one, being an advocate for yourself, making sure that, you know, if someone brings a cancer, you get a diagnosis, you oftentimes patients feel like if no one's setting up appointments or doing that, it's because it's not an important thing. That may not be true. It may be very important. Sometimes you need to advocate for yourself, and you need to reach out and call and make sure that you have an appointment coming up and make sure that they really have you on the schedule and all that, because in rural communities, especially when there's less doctors around, things can slip through the cracks. And although it's rare, it can happen. And I think just being a good advocate for yourself and knowing that is really important. The other thing is that when you meet an oncologist, when you get a cancer team, the team itself is usually not just one doctor. Usually there's multiple doctors that represent a full cancer team. So the way I see it, as for myself, for example, I'm an oncologist, I'm the quarterback, and I can usually refer you to all these other people. So I can send you to, you know, if you're having a lot of pain, someone who helps manage that type of pain. If you have some other issue, I could send you to that subspecialist, whether it be, you know, if you're having lung issues, a lung doctor, whether it be if you're having, you know, diabetes or some other issue, someone that can help support that. Or if you're dealing with a lot of other chronic health issues, like a cardiologist or your primary care doctor, and just looping them all together, we end up all being a team that supports you. And that can be difficult in the rural communities just because, you know, you may live far away, but having multiple doctors can be very helpful. It just becomes challenging sometimes when you have to travel a lot for that care. So because of that, I would highly recommend asking what kind of programs there may be to help simplify that. So for example, there are social workers that can really help with finding ways to get you, if you need certain coverages for like a hotel stay while you're in town or travel reimbursements for things. Oftentimes those things exist through healthcare means, and you could just ask for them, or, you know, let your doctor know, social worker know, and we can help assist in ways to make sure that that you get the care that you do need. And then I think just being vocal on, are you having any side effects? What kind of side effects are you having? And these are things that we can help with too. I think overall, being diagnosed with cancer is very overwhelming, and it does take a village. The other thing is, it's very important that when you do, let's say you're diagnosed with cancer, you've gotten your diagnosis, you've gotten your oncologist, and you have a treatment plan. It is very important to make those visits as much as you can. So what I mean by that is usually most, let's say you have, I treat mostly lymphoma. Let's say you have a diagnosis of lymphoma. Our treatments for lymphoma, we have usually chemoimmunotherapy-based treatments that are given for, let's say, 6 cycles, which ends up being about 4.5 months. Let's say you have diffuse large B-cell, for example. We give something called R-CHOP, which is chemotherapy, and we do that for about 4.5 months. That treatment is usually given once every 3 weeks. And so let's say you live far away, you can come once every 3 weeks, come get the treatment, and you can go back home for those 3 weeks in between. But it is very important that you're able to make those follow-up visits. And because patients, when they're on treatments, you have to stick to the schedule to really get the best outcome. And I know it can be hard, but being able to do that is really of the utmost importance. The other thing is, when you live far away, let's say you travel for your treatments, oftentimes you can get laboratory tests closer to home. So you could actually get blood tests, other things. If there are certain like injections you need for like immune boosters with something called Neulasta that we use, we can actually sometimes do those closer to home at a facility that's secondarily related. And you can just work with your doctor, work with your healthcare team to help get those set up. And that oftentimes makes it much easier for our patients who travel. And overall, I think that it's really tough. I work with a lot of community oncologists because the disease I treat is chronic lymphocytic leukemia, which is the most common form of leukemia in the United States. And most patients are actually not managed in an academic setting like where I work. They're actually managed in the community. So one thing that I do is I work with a lot of community oncologists, and I may actually never see their patients. They'll ask me questions. So they'll reach out to me. They'll be like, hey, I have this patient with this. Any advice? So that's another thing a patient can do from their perspective is if they're dealing with a very kind of unique or niche type of cancer, you can ask your local oncologist if there's any specialists that are at an academic institution that may have more specialized knowledge. And usually us academic oncologists can work with a local oncologist to give recommendations. We may be able to see you additionally for a second opinion, and we can provide additional recommendations or shine light onto new treatments that may, you know, only recently be available that, you know, not many other people may know about. And so I think that is really, really important. The other thing we offer sometimes is clinical trials, and I know we'll be discussing more clinical trials later on, but those are also a very important avenue for patients in rural communities, because you often can get very, very good treatments for your cancer through these specific means. So advocating for yourself, asking your oncologist if there's a subspecialist that you may be able to engage with, or make sure that you're getting the best treatments, and then if there's any clinical trials. And I think being able to have multiple doctors, understand the role of each doctor. Every doctor is different. I know that sometimes when in rural communities, one community person has to do a lot, but having multiple key pieces of people to talk to for each specific symptom can be extremely helpful. And I think with that, I will pause, and I think we could potentially move on to the next section.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Ehrman. I'm sure that there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. And our next speaker is Dr. Kayla Miranda. And Dr. Miranda is a hematologist-oncologist at the Michael E. Zubecki VA Medical Center, assistant professor, section of hematology and oncology, Baylor College of Medicine. And Dr. Miranda will be discussing specific questions to ask your healthcare team about cancer clinical trials and participating in clinical trials in rural communities, adjusting to your cancer treatment over time, the importance and challenges of taking your treatment on schedule, adherence and review of resources to remind you to take your treatment on schedule, as well as communicating with your oncology team about who on the team to contact with questions and key questions to ask. It is now my great pleasure to hand this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Miranda.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure being here today. Thank you for inviting me. So my name is Dr. Kayla Miranda. I am a primarily medical oncologist here in Houston at the VA and also with Baylor College of Medicine. I see mainly gastrointestinal tumors along with some other solid tumors as well. Just to start, you know, for many rural cancer patients, the challenge is not only the disease or the cancer itself, but also the distance, time, cost, and limited access to specialized care that I think Dr. Ehrman already gave a really great summary of. And these barriers can make it harder to receive timely treatment or to participate in clinical trials and to access the support services that help patients through their cancer journey. So in the next 10 to 12 minutes, I hope to offer some advice about how to communicate with your oncologist and get the most, especially out of that first clinic visit. I'll also discuss what to expect once you start treatment and some challenges that may arise. And I'll briefly discuss how patients may access cancer clinical trials from rural communities. So when you first receive a cancer diagnosis, it is not unusual to feel overwhelmed by all of the information coming your way. And because so much is covered in the first visit with your oncologist, I highly encourage patients to bring a trusted friend or family member with them to be their support system, to help take notes and ask follow-up questions, and really just be that extra pair of eyes and ears during the appointment. At that first visit with your oncologist, there are several questions I think are essential to ask. The first, and Dr. Ehrman already touched on this, but the first question really is, what is the type and stage of my cancer? What are the treatment options? What is the goal of treatment? Is it to cure the cancer, or is it to extend my life and improve symptoms? How frequent are my treatments? And for how long will I be on them? I think it's always helpful to ask for your diagnosis and treatment information in writing so that you can bring that information back to your family when they ask you those questions. Now, many of my patients live in rural communities. I can't say I have any patients travel 13 hours like Dr. Ehrman's, but I frequently have patients traveling 3 or 4 hours to come and see me. So they do travel a significant distance for clinic visits and for treatment. You may want to ask your oncologist if there's a treatment option that requires fewer in-person visits. You may also want to ask if you can consolidate care. So for example, combining lab appointments, CAT scan appointments, and a provider visit all on the same day can make it easier than having to come back and forth on multiple days in the same week. Some providers may even offer virtual or telehealth visits to minimize the travel burden. And finally, and this is essential, be sure you understand how to contact your oncology team both during and after business hours. Depending on the office, their phone number may direct you to a nurse to triage your call or directly to a physician on call. And some offices may even have a secure messaging portal that's kind of similar to email, so you can contact your health team directly. When you first start your treatment, your provider will review the name of the treatment and how often you'll get it, and they'll talk to you about some potential side effects to watch out for. Some treatments are given every week or even multiple times per week. Some treatments are given once a month or even less frequently. It's important to understand the schedule of your treatment so you know what to expect and how to plan your life. So for example, many of my patients are on a chemotherapy regimen every 2 weeks. And after a few rounds of this, they often get into a rhythm. So for example, they may say, you know, I feel well the day of chemo and the day after, but then I have a few days where I feel more tired. But by the second week, I kind of feel back to myself. And each patient may respond a little bit differently to their treatment, but after a few cycles, you know what to expect for yourself. and you become more familiar with those side effects and how to manage them. If you're taking oral medications for your cancer, it can sometimes be helpful to use other resources to stay on schedule. I think everyone has a hard time remembering to take pills. So especially if you have multiple medications to take, I highly recommend a pill organizer to stay on top of everything. There are also many smartphone apps to help with reminding you to take your medications. I personally like using the health app on the iPhone, but there are many others out there that are free and easy to use. And for patients who are not tech savvy, you can even get like an electronic pill dispenser, which provides visual and auditory alerts when your medication is due. In general, it's important to continue your treatment on schedule whenever possible. So for patients who are being treated, especially for a defined period of time with the intent to cure, and I think lymphoma is a good example of this, we're often much more concerned with staying on schedule, and we typically only delay treatment if absolutely necessary. However, some patients with more advanced cancer may be on therapy indefinitely. And in this situation, it's not uncommon to have treatment delays or holidays from treatment if you feel sick and need a break, or if you need some time to travel. And this is all part of the art of what we do as oncologists. You know, we know life doesn't stop when you're done with cancer. And in fact, I would argue that those days doing the things you love or visiting family and friends become even more precious and important. Some things that can be helpful when adjusting to your treatment. Number one, try to stay active. Go for a walk or do some light housework. Can try lifting small free weights or even using a stationary bike. And I say even if it's just for 15 to 30 minutes a day, we have a lot of data that patients who are more active tend to tolerate treatment better. Not only that, but regular physical activity has been shown to improve fatigue, depression, and anxiety. I also recommend trying to eat a well-balanced diet. And for patients who are struggling with poor appetite, eating small, frequent meals throughout the day and focusing on sort of calorie and protein-dense meals can be helpful to prevent weight loss. If you're taking any herbal supplements or alternate medicines, please be sure to let your oncologist know, because some supplements may have side effects or may interfere with your treatment. Now, if you are having a lot of symptoms or side effects from your treatment, I do recommend keeping a log or a diary that you bring to your oncologist. In many cases, treatment can be adjusted if you're having significant side effects that aren't responding to supportive care medications. I commonly have to reduce the dose of chemotherapy if symptoms are impacting their day-to-day. Sometimes we even switch the treatment entirely, and sometimes patients will decide to stop treatment if it's too toxic. Your oncologist should see you quite frequently at the beginning of treatment to assess how you're feeling and adjust the medication if needed. But before starting treatment, ask your oncologist what symptoms should prompt you to call them and come to the emergency room. And this is especially important for our patients in rural communities who may not have access to a hospital or a clinic down the street. So talk with your family and oncologist in advance, so you know which hospital you'll go to if there's an emergency. And please act early if you're not feeling well. Don't wait for your next clinic appointment. So in the last few minutes that I have, I'm going to talk about clinical trials. Clinical trials are very carefully designed research studies that test new ways to prevent, diagnose, or treat cancer. These studies help doctors learn whether a new treatment is safe and works better or differently from the current standard treatment. Participating in a clinical trial is voluntary, and it typically requires frequent visits and close monitoring by a research team. Clinical trials are usually conducted at large academic hospitals in urban areas, and because of this, patients in rural communities may not have easy access to trials. If you're interested in participating in clinical trials, there are a few ways to get connected with researchers. Number one is to ask your oncologist. Many community oncologists may be aware of ongoing studies at nearby academic centers or may have connections in their fields. Like Dr. Ehrman mentioned, it's a smaller world than you think. A lot of us know each other, and we know what kind of research is going on at neighboring facilities. So please just ask your oncologist first and foremost. The second way to find a trial is to get a second opinion at your closest academic hospital. And this actually works pretty well sometimes if you have a community oncologist that you see sort of week to week or month by month for your usual care. And then you may see a subspecialist at an academic hospital that's further away less frequently to be screened for trials. Last, you can also search for clinical trials online using clinicaltrials.gov. This website keeps a log of all active and recruiting clinical trials in the U.S. So you can search for trials that include your cancer type, and you can search based on location. And if you find a trial that sounds interesting to you and sounds like you might be a candidate, I encourage you to bring this information to your oncologist to review, because they may be able to help determine if you're eligible for that trial, and they can help contact their research staff on your behalf. Once you're under consideration for a study, you'll have to go through a screening process. The research team may ask to repeat some testing, such as CAT scans or biopsies. It's very important to understand that not all patients will qualify for a clinical trial, and some clinical trials may not be the right fit for a patient. When you're considering a clinical trial, make sure you understand the travel requirements, what extra appointments may be involved, and the associated costs involved. It's important to work closely with your healthcare team and make sure you feel comfortable with the goals of the research and the requirements before you agree to participate. But of course, at the end of the day, our goal is that all patients, no matter where they live or where they come from, have the opportunity to participate in clinical trials if this is within their goals. Finally, before I finish, I just want to thank the Cancer Care Organization again for having me. It's a pleasure to talk to you on this very important topic that I think is not talked about enough. And for all of you listening, I wish you all the very best during your cancer journey.
Thank you very much, Dr. Miranda. And our next speaker is Dr. Annie Fenton. And Dr. Fenton is a medical sociologist, faculty scientist, Center for Interdisciplinary Population and Health Research, Maine Health Institute for Research. And Dr. Fenton will be discussing quality of life concerns, discussing quality of life concerns with your healthcare team. Excuse me. It is now my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Fenton.
Thank you so much. And thank you for inviting me. And it's nice to have Dr. Miranda go before me, because she touched on a lot of the issues that I think are really important to having this quality of life conversation with your team. So one of the things I wanted to start with is essentially my own personal story of why I think this is one of the most important conversations to have with your team when diagnosed with cancer, and why this topic is so near and dear to my heart. So I am originally from the state of Maine in a very rural area, and I was my mother's main caregiver who passed away from colon cancer. And we would spend hours commuting down to Dana-Farber in Boston. It was about a 4-hour drive without traffic. And it was a ton of effort and time and money. And every time her oncologist asked how she was doing, she'd say, "I'm fine." I knew that wasn't true. She was struggling to sleep. Eating felt like a chore. She was actually a professor of literature, so chemobrain felt particularly painful. She was also worried she wouldn't live to get to meet her granddaughter, and she missed swimming in the river. But she had a port for chemo, and so we were always worried it would get infected. And like most people, but especially people from rural areas who live and breathe independence, she's worried about being a burden. And I think that worry is probably what kept her quiet when her doctor asked how she was. She felt like it would be a waste of her oncologist's time to talk about anything other than her labs or her treatment plan. I felt that too. The colon cancer diet is really strict about seeds, and I knew my mother missed eating the wild blueberries that grew in our field and the sun gold cherry tomatoes she grew that everyone always asked for. But after driving 4 hours, an overnight stay, and sitting in front of this guy who had spent a decade in training, was I really going to spend our precious 30 minutes on eating seeds? So that was almost 10 years ago. Since then, I've talked to hundreds of patients, caregivers, and oncologists, and become an expert in how they communicate. And it turns out those quality of life concerns that my mom and I were worried would be a waste of time, they're some of the most important conversations to have. And not raising them with my mother and her team is one of my biggest regrets. So I also want to make sure we are on the same page about what quality of life actually means. At its core, quality of life is really simple. It's just, do you feel good enough to do the things in life that matter to you? And that's why these conversations are so important and what Dr. Miranda touched on. What does it matter if the tumor shrinks, if you can't do the things that make life important and meaningful to you? So this definition also means that everyone has their own personal recipe for what makes a high quality life. It might mean less pain so you can get down on your knees and garden, enough energy to make it to your grandchild's dance recital, or sometimes it's even simpler than that, just a few quiet minutes to lose yourself to the sights and smells of a new season finally arriving. Whatever those ingredients are for you, they matter. And again, as I hope you got from the previous speaker's talk, they matter to your healthcare team too. So yes, often oncology appointments are mostly spent on labs and scans and treatment plans, but all of that is in service to a larger goal, which is maximizing your quality of life, however you define it. Since what makes a good life varies from person to person, your team doesn't know what matters to you unless you tell them. So in medicine, we generally use 5 different buckets to think about and assess quality of life. There's your physical health. So for cancer patients, that's often things like, what's your pain level? What's your nausea? What's your fatigue? There's also emotional and cognitive health. So the stress and sadness of having this disease, and then the brain fog of the treatment. There's also your functional capacity. That is your ability to do daily activities like getting dressed, and then the more meaningful ones. And then finally, it's about your finances and your relationships with friends and family. And obviously, all these things are connected and they affect one another. So after this talk, I encourage you to sit and think about those buckets and notice which ones feel emptier than they could be. Maybe nausea is really interfering with your life. Maybe you'd like to visit someone but can't fit it in around treatments. Maybe gas prices are making it hard to get to your appointments. And you don't need to nail down exactly what you're struggling with. Your team can help, but you do need to start thinking about it. And most importantly, you have to talk to your team. And starting that conversation is simpler than you might think. So write down a few things you've been struggling with, and at your next appointment, right at the beginning, say, I'd like to make sure we discuss some ways to improve my quality of life. I've been struggling with a couple of things. That's it. Your team will ask what's going on, and like any other symptom, they will work with you to come up with a plan. Now, let's talk more about the challenges of this conversation and how living in a rural area plays into it. So the first barrier, and I say this with full respect as somebody who grew up in a rural area, is ourselves. Rural people hate to admit something is bothering them, let alone ask for help with it. It gets drilled into us that this is a weakness and that with enough effort and duct tape, you can solve anything all by yourself. But you can't duct tape your way out of cancer. Hence why you have an oncology team. And it turns out maintaining quality of life is central to cancer treatment. So help your team do their job by telling them what's actually going on. The second barrier is money, something else nobody likes to talk about, but financial strain after any serious diagnosis is common. And the risk is higher for rural folks who usually earn less than their urban counterparts and spend more time and money getting to treatment. So if finances are causing you to worry or choose between which bills to pay, your team needs to know that. And they will never withhold treatment because of cost, but they can connect you to resources to help. For example, those early morning labs that mean you might have to stay in a hotel the night before. If the team can't change the lab's time, most clinics can connect you with free or subsidized places to stay, which Dr. Ehrman mentioned. The third barrier is access to services in rural areas. So sometimes to address your quality of life, your team's plan might involve referring you to a resource closer to home, like physical therapy, a mental health counselor, or a support group. But anyone from a rural area knows that the wait list for these services is often months long if the service exists nearby at all. Remind your team of this. Often they can help you find a resource that you could use, access online or by phone, similar to this presentation. If internet access is an issue, tell your team so they can help figure out a workaround. Relatedly, there are two local resources worth using. There is your local clinician, who likely knows more about local resources than your oncology team. And then for those based in the United States, your county will have a local area agency on aging, which is a wealth of practical support and essentially a cyclopedia for local resources. So now I'll take a moment to sum up. Quality of life is, do you feel good enough to do the things in life that matter to you? Think about where you are with those five buckets of quality of life. So there's your physical health, plus emotional and cognitive health, your capacity to do things, your finances, and your relationships with friends and family. Take notes and talk to your team about which buckets could be better. You may need to remind them that rural life means long and costly commutes and fewer services. And don't overlook your local doctor and area agency on aging. They can fill gaps your oncology team are not aware of. And lastly, maximizing quality of life is central to cancer care. So help your team do their job and do your job as a patient or a caregiver of a patient and talk to your team about what is interfering with you making meaning in your life. And thank you all, I'm there.
Thank you very much, Dr. Fenton. Thank you for your presentation. I also want to thank you for sharing your own personal experience with your mother. I'm sure there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, and I just want to thank everyone on this panel so far. Again, it's been an excellent presentation. And our next speaker is Ms. Nikki Molfettis, and Ms. Molfettis is an oncology social worker and New Jersey program coordinator here at Cancer Care. And Ms. Molfettis will be discussing Cancer Care's free national programs and services, as well as our Hope Line and website. It's now my great pleasure to hand this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Molfettis.
Thank you so much, and thank you everyone for being here. Welcome. My name is Nikki Molfettis. I am the New Jersey Program Coordinator, as well as an oncology social worker here at Cancer Care. Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization providing free professional support services and information to help people manage the emotional, practical, and financial challenges of cancer. Our comprehensive services include resource navigation, counseling, support groups, educational workshops like this today, publications, and limited financial assistance. There are many aspects of cancer that may be addressed throughout psychosocial supportive services, making informed treatment decisions, quality of life concerns, clinical trials, fertility options, communication with the medical team, and much more. These are all important topics that can be discussed with an oncology social worker. Individuals may choose to supplement their existing social networks by choosing to join a support group or engaging in counseling services. Many hospitals, treatment centers, and nonprofit organizations offer supportive services. Being a member in a support group can offer the opportunity to connect with others who are going through a similar situation, obtain information, and provide support. Our online support groups take place on a password-protected website and are moderated by licensed oncology social workers who can offer further support and guidance. You can register for an online support group through our website at cancercare.org. We also offer resource navigation. This service is offered nationally to patients, post-treatment survivors, and caregivers affected by cancer. It's a short-term, strength-based approach to case management, where the social worker will work with a client in connecting them to resources, referrals, and financial assistance. Individuals may also experience practical and financial concerns throughout their treatment. Please note that if you are encountering these hardships, there are organizations out there to help. As mentioned earlier, CancerCare offers resource navigation services as well as limited financial assistance. If you are navigating any practical or financial concerns, I encourage you to call our National Hope Line at 1-800-813-4673 to speak with one of our oncology social workers. We are here to offer you support throughout this experience and are looking forward to speaking with you soon. It's been such a pleasure to be part of this program. Thank you again.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mulfettis. And now we're going to move on to the Q&A. I'm going to ask Bella to explain to you how to queue up for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
Thank you. All right, and our first question is for Ms. Mulfettis. Where do you recommend I start looking for help covering the cost of getting to treatment? I have to take a lift, and my insurance does not cover the entire cost.
Yeah, that's a great question. I would recommend starting by connecting with your medical team. I think we had kind of touched base on that a little bit throughout this topic, but many of the oncology teams include a hospital social worker, patient advocate, financial navigator, a nurse navigator. And these are all individuals who can help identify resources available either through the cancer center or within the local community. Transportation costs can be a significant barrier to accessing treatment, and many cancer centers sometimes offer assistance programs such as like a gas card, maybe a rideshare voucher, transportation grants. In addition, there are organizations such as ours and disease-specific foundations that may provide financial assistance for treatment-related expenses. Eligibility requirements vary program by program, but the first step we always say is just reaching out to learn what options may be available to you, because you never know. It also might be helpful to contact the insurance company to ask about case management services. So although insurance companies may not be able to cover the entire cost, they might be able to provide a case manager or care coordinator who can just assist with identifying additional resources. And lastly, I would just recommend considering connecting with others through a support group or a peer matching program. Individuals who have faced similar challenges may be able to share resources, strategies, programs that were helpful in managing transportation. But I think the biggest takeaway is just knowing you're not alone in navigating these challenges, and reaching out to organizations and your medical team is the first step. Thanks.
Great. Thank you very much, Ms. Mulfettis. A question here for Dr. Miranda. I have a hard time getting my husband to go to the ER. He often refuses to go because it takes us such a long time to get there. How would you define an emergency, or what would prompt going to the ER?
That's a great question. And that may vary a little bit from person to person, depending on the cancer you have, the type of treatment you're on. So I'll give some general guidelines, but I would highly recommend you ask that exact question to your husband's primary oncologist or hematologist to see what sort of specific answers they give for your situation. I'll tell you, in my situation, I typically tell patients, you know, when they're on something like cytotoxic chemotherapy, they are often immunosuppressed. And so if patients develop a fever, and we define a fever as 100.4 or higher, I tell them to please go ahead and make their way to an emergency room to be evaluated rather than just trying to face it at home alone. You'd rather go to the ER and be told it's nothing than be at home and have the situation escalate before you can make it to a medical team. There are some other things that I think are pretty generalizable for most patients. So if you're unable to eat or drink, if you're unable to keep fluids down, which can lead to really severe dehydration, that's a good sign that you need to be in an emergency room and call your medical team. If you're having nausea and vomiting or diarrhea that's not responding to medication at home, another good reason to go in to the hospital as well. If you're having severe pain that's not responding to pain medications that you usually take at home, I would go to the emergency room. And then finally, if you've noticed that you're getting weaker, so, you know, if you're normally able to walk and do things around the house, but all of a sudden, you know, the patient's not walking, they're in bed all day, they're unable to get up, that's a situation where I do recommend patients seek care in an emergency room setting. And Dr. Fenton touched on this, but especially our patients in rural communities, and I take care of a veteran population who I can tell you really, they have put a lot of emphasis on their independence and their ability to be warriors through pain. And I always tell them that, you know, that we are here for a reason, that we're here to help support you through this. You do not need to suffer alone. And cancer care is a team sport. So, I think that's all I can say. At the end of the day, your husband will make the decision he makes, but I would reach out to your healthcare cancer team if you really need more support.
Thank you very much, Dr. Miranda. We have a question here for Dr. Fenton. Do you have any advice on how to get involved in my brother's care? He was recently diagnosed with cancer, and I live in a different state, so I cannot physically be with him, but there's a way to attend his telehealth appointments or anything that I can do away from him.
That is such a great question, and so often I am talking to family members who live far away from the person they have who has cancer. So first of all, I'll give you some ideas, but it's important to have that conversation with your brother and figure out what would be helpful to him. And so things that I have generally heard that have been very helpful in this type of situation is calling insurance for the patient, calling into these medical appointments so you can be a second set of ears and take notes, because sometimes it's really overwhelming to just digest all the information. Another thing that people often find helpful is having someone be this key point person for organizing everybody else who wants to help. And so there are online systems like Caring Bridge and IonicCare and Meal Train, where, you know, people can sign up to bring a meal or assist with transportation or something specific. And you can be in charge of figuring out what your brother needs and when, and then coordinating with friends and family to make sure that need is met. And you can also just do that through a group text message. Other things that you might consider are, again, just being a listening ear to your brother, being a place to vent if you have that type of relationship, or if your other family members are still around and involved, that is always amazing, but sometimes patients find it a little stressful and feel like they have to manage their family members' own anxiety. And so maybe being that barrier for your brother to some more anxious family members who want to help.
Great. Thank you very much, Dr. Fenton. We have one more question here for Dr. Ehrman. Does living in a rural community affect the risk of developing cancer?
That's a really very interesting question, and it's a little complicated. So I would say generally, you know, I get this question a lot, whether or not, you know, if there's anything that the patients could have done to prevent, you know, after you get that diagnosis of cancer, is there something they could have done to prevent that cancer from happening? And I oftentimes tell patients generally no, you know, these cancers, they're very various. You know, like I said, I treat most patients with CLL. A lot of the cancers I see in my practice occur from, you know, bad luck. They just occur from DNA breaks and they just happen. You know, obviously there are certain things you can do, like not smoking, you know, having good modifiable risk factors, good lifestyle, exercise activities. But even patients who do everything right, they may end up with a cancer diagnosis. Now, living in a rural community adds a little layer onto that because, you know, there are some things where patients in rural communities are exposed to certain things that other people are not. So there's something called downwinders, there's radiation exposure, there's patients who worked in uranium mines and have like these kind of unusual or, you know, at the time it was unknown exposures, including things like benzene, if they worked with benzene or other high-risk chemicals, where those can actually contribute to the development of cancer formation. So in my community, I live in Utah, Nevada. Some of these places, they are the areas that affected the downwinders from, I think it was the 1960s, where there was nuclear tests and the bomb tests, that those patients may have developed cancer from that. But it's variable and it's really hard to ever know. If you do think that could have been happening to you, you can look into it. There's like some programs on that. I think the RECA program, R-E-C-A, online, and there's some other programs. But outside of that, I generally say, you know, living in a rural community, it does have some risks. You know, you may be exposed to things or certain chemicals that may or may not contribute to cancer formation, including, you know, glyphosate, which is like Roundup and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. That's a controversial one. But oftentimes I chalk most cancer diagnoses to bad luck unless there's been some obvious other exposure.
Great. Thank you very much, Dr. Ehrman. And now I'm going to ask our speakers to provide their takeaways. So just a brief takeaway to conclude. We'll start with Dr. Ehrman, then Dr. Miranda, Dr. Fenton, and then Ms. Molfettis.
I think I'd first just like to say thanks again for having me. This has been so educational for myself as well, just learning from my colleagues here and other speakers. It's been extremely educational for me, and I really love hearing everyone else's point of views and the stories that people are willing to share. I think the bottom line is getting diagnosed with cancer is not fun. It's terrible. It's not enjoyable, and it's stressful, and it overall sucks. And being in a rural community does just add a layer on top of that of complexity due to just not always being close to things. And I think that the biggest takeaway I would have is you know, you're an individual, but it's a team. So, you know, I know people who live in rural communities tend to be very independent people and want to do everything for themselves, but I really think you can always rely on your healthcare team. Communication is very key, reaching out, being an advocate for yourself, making sure you keep track of your appointments, try to loop in your family members. And I think even just participating in this is a huge, huge step. And you guys are probably all ahead of the game, just, you know, by nature of you being here. But just knowing that there's these extra layers, and then also know that there's resources out there. So there are resources, you know, there's like this cancer care, there's social workers that want to help. There's usually, us academic, we have these funds and resources for patients who live far away. So you're not alone. There's a lot of resources and people want to help. And so please reach out, and we desperately wish that you all have a great outcome. You or your family members have a good outcome with their cancer.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ehrman. And Dr. Miranda?
I agree with everything Dr. Ehrman already said, and I'll just add, you know, for those interested in clinical trials, I do recommend speaking with your primary oncologist and trying to connect with the closest university cancer center to your area to see what's available in your region. And then my final piece of advice to you is really to build your support system. I mean, I said this before, but going through cancer is a marathon. It is not a sprint. You do need a team of people behind you, whether it's family, friends, neighbors, faith communities, or your healthcare team. You know, we as oncologists are here to treat the person, not the cancer. And that means sometimes getting creative with treatment and figuring out ways to, you know, adjust your treatment to make it fit into your life. So if you have questions, if you have concerns, if you're not feeling good about how your treatment is going, please bring up those concerns with your oncologist.
Thank you, Dr. Miranda and Dr. Fenton.
I wholeheartedly agree with everything else that has been said before. I think that, again, I just want people to take away that having a conversation with your team about how to improve your quality of life is so essential. And that if you don't want to do it for yourself, do it for your loved ones, because they really want you to be able to enjoy yourself and be a part of their life and your life. And that is what your healthcare provider wants too. So you will never be annoying someone or be looking weak by saying that maybe some things could be improved.
Thank you very much, Dr. Fenton. And Ms. Malfettis?
Yeah, thank you. I definitely agree with what everyone has said. I think all the information that was provided today was really valuable. But just reminding yourselves that a diagnosis, it impacts the whole family, and there are the supportive services out there, whether it's the medical team or organizations or support groups. It becomes a challenge, and it can feel challenging to reach out, but the first step is reaching out for that support and seeing what might be available to you. So just remember that you're never alone in this. There's a lot of support out there.
Thank you very much, Ms. Malfettis. I just want to take a moment now to thank all of our speakers today. This was a phenomenal panel. It's the first time we've done this workshop, and I really hope that we get to continue to do it again in the future. As our speakers have mentioned, it's a topic that we don't get to touch on as often as we necessarily should. And so I want to thank everyone again for speaking on this program, for the participants for being here, and for asking questions. I do want to say for those of you that asked a question, if you were typing your question or you didn't get to ask it, please take your question to go back to your healthcare team. Please remember that you've learned a great deal from this program. There's a lot of information shared. Go back to your treating healthcare team and ask them your questions again and again. And then for those still listening, this program is recorded. It'll be up online on our website if you want to come back and listen to it And we will also have an email be sent out about a week to 2 weeks from now that will have all the resources listed during this workshop. So please don't feel as if you had to write everything down right now. And lastly, I just want to echo what everybody else has said. Please remember that you are not alone. You have a community of support here at Cancer Care. Please know that we are here for you. And again, I want to thank everyone for participating in this workshop today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.